Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you are listening to the Elchar Chronicles. I am your host, Karen Elchar. This program chronicles issues of law and order and our local justice system, the environment, and indigenous issues with special guests that dig deep into topics less talked about here in the Lehigh Valley. This evening, our topic is the recently issued U.S. Environmental Protection Agency rules on toxic chemicals known as PFAS, or more familiarly known as forever chemicals, in drinking water. With me to shed light on the latest developments is Ms. Stephanie Wine, clean water advocate with Penn Environment Research and Policy Center. It's a pleasure to have you back on the program, Stephanie. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me back, Karen.
So having worked in the chemical industry for 18 years, let me give a bit of background on PFAS, these forever chemicals. PFAS are a group of chemicals used to make fluoropolymer coatings and products that resist heat, oil, stains, grease, and water. These coatings can be used in a variety of products, including clothing, furniture, adhesives, food packaging, heat-resistant nonstick cooking surfaces, and insulation of electrical wire. Many PFAS are a concern because they do not break down in the environment. They can move through soils and contaminate drinking water sources, and they build up in fish and wildlife. PFAS are found in rivers and lakes and many types of animals on both land and in water. Studies of laboratory animals given large amounts of PFAS indicate that some PFAS may affect growth and development, as well as reproduction, thyroid function, the immune system, and also injure the liver. Since 1999, CDC scientists have measured at least 12 PFAS in blood serum, which is the clear portion of the blood. Blood serum was obtained from participants aged 12 years and older who participated in a national survey. And by measuring PFAS in serum, scientists can estimate the amount of these forever chemicals in people's bodies. CDC scientists found 4 of these forever chemicals in the serum of nearly all the people tested. This indicates widespread exposure to forever chemicals. So, Stephanie, with this background, the EPA has created these rules, and it obviously is a significant first step in addressing forever chemicals in drinking water. So tell us about the new rules.
Yes, and thank you for sort of setting up what we're talking about when we talk about PFAS. And so this past Wednesday, the Environmental Protection Agency finalized limits on 6 per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, so PFAS, in drinking water. And so what that means is that our water authorities that clean and filter the water that comes out of our tap now finally have levels that they need to bring these contaminants down below. And so up until now, even though we've known for years that PFAS pose a threat to public health, that they're associated, as you say, reproductive issues, with thyroid issues, they're also associated with rare cancers, they can cause developmental issues. Even though this has been known for a long time, our water authorities actually didn't have any hard guidances on how to keep us safe from these chemicals. And so some water authorities had started doing some testing for PFAS in the last decade or so, and when they tended to test, they tended to find it. But, and especially given that these chemicals aren't safe at any level, it was really important that there be a cohesive rule that requires all our water authorities to bring PFAS down into the low, low parts per trillion to non-detective possible to safeguard public health. And so this is a really first big step in protecting the public from PFAS in our water. And it's been a really long time coming. Pennsylvania sort of rung the early alarm bells on PFAS. There have been some really high profile incidences of contamination here in the Commonwealth, like the contamination surrounding the Willow Grove Air Force Base in southeastern Pennsylvania. There's been some high profile cases of contamination in Emmaus in the Lehigh Valley and of the Three Rivers in Pittsburgh. And so Pennsylvanians have been dealing with and talking about this PFAS contamination for a long time. And so for Penn Environment, this has long been a priority, is to get these protections in place for public drinking water. So I talked about how this applies to people who are on public water, on municipal water. At the same time that the EPA announced the finalization of this rule, it also released $1 billion in funding from the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law that would address PFAS contamination in well water. And so well water provides the drinking water for over 3.5 million Pennsylvanians. There's a lot of folks, both rural and suburban, who rely on wells that could be contaminated with PFAS. And so this is a big step forward for all of us, those of us who rely on municipal water, those of us who have wells. We're at this moment where there are finally strong standards and the resources have been made available to start upgrading our water infrastructure and keep us safe from this seemingly now omnipresent suite of chemicals.
But why is EPA taking a step now? Why didn't they start this earlier?
So this is something we've been calling for a long time. And I think it's for a couple reasons. One is that for a while, even though we've known that PFAS were really toxic to human health, there wasn't a lot of expediency in dealing with them. And I think we were all a little bit, as a community, sort of hesitant to admit how widespread these were. And it's scary. You know, one water authority is testing here and another's testing there. We know we're looking at just the tip of this very toxic iceberg. And so as the awareness has grown, I think regulators have been forced to deal with the reality that this is, you know, we call them forever chemicals for a reason. They're not going away. But it really took pressure stepping up to get our decision makers to take this on. What I like about the rules is that, you know, PFAS, as you say, PFAS, it's a suite of chemicals. And so this doesn't address one or two, but actually six of the most common. And it looks at how they work in combination. And so the rule, even though it was a long time coming, is very strong. It sets a very, very, very low acceptable level, basically at the lower limit of what our technology is able to pick up. And it looks at how these chemicals work in concert with one another. And so in other places where we've seen, we call the maximum contaminant levels MCLs, that's the cutoff that's allowed at the water treatment plant. You know, we've seen that, you know, one type of PFAS could be just below the limit and another type of PFAS could be just below its limit. But then together, combined, even though it's perfectly legal, you could then be having a really high dose from when you can put all the chemicals together. This rule actually looks at how the additive impact of chemicals, which makes it pretty strong, something that we were very excited to see. And again, what we'd been calling for certainly as long as I've been at Penn Environment.
Mm-hmm. So some of the public drinking water systems, as you've mentioned, they've already been following their own rules, would you say? Or what would they base their activities on if the EPA just came out with specific rules?
Yeah, so because PFAS has been in the category of a quote-unquote emerging contaminant, so something that was on our radar as a threat to water quality but wasn't already being regulated, there are water authorities that are like, all right, we're going to get out of this proactively. We're going to look to see if PFAS is there. We're going to do some filtering on our own. Those are essentially going, you know, out on a limb to go above and beyond. The EPA had previous recommendations that PFAS be below 70 parts per trillion, but we know that, you know, when it's not safe at any level, that's obviously far too high. Of course, that's better than nothing. The water levels at places like Willow Grove, where there's acute PFAS contamination, that was in the parts per billion. So, you know, 1,000 times higher than what this EPA is already too high of a recommended cutoff. It's in the past by the EPA that if you have a level above 70 parts per trillion, you should issue an advisory. You should let people know. Again, obviously that was better than nothing, but that's still far too high. And so the new cutoffs in the low parts per trillion, you know, 4 and 10 for the different chemicals, that's much more science-based. So we're glad to see that. So some water authorities have been taking steps on their own. This is much stronger. What I will say also is that 2 years ago, Pennsylvania formalized its own rules around PFAS and set its own standards around the two most common chemicals, PFOA and PFOS. for those who are, keeping track of the alphabet soup at home, those are two of the most common and most toxic of PFAS chemicals. The state had set their own limits. The new federal rule goes far and beyond what the state had set as a limit to something that is even stronger, even more grounded in the health science as we know it, and applies to a broader suite of chemicals. And so some water authorities were already acting on their own. Then the state promulgated its own rule in the recent past, but now the federal rule, which is even stronger, will supersede what states have been doing on their own and making sure that all Americans, sort of regardless of where you are able to have that same level of protection, and they're not relying on their own water authority or on the state government sort of stepping in and filling that regulatory void.
Mm-hmm. So when do these rules take effect?
So there are a few benchmarks that people can keep an eye out for. So the final rule requires that the public water systems must monitor for these PFAS over the next 3 years. So they have 3 years to complete the initial monitoring. And so that ends by 2027. And then public water systems have 5 years by 2029 to implement solutions to reduce the PFAS if monitoring shows drinking water levels in excess of these new established limits. And so over the next 3 years, they have to make sure that their monitoring is up to snuff. And then they have two more additional years to bring down the PFAS levels below these new cutoffs. And then if they fail to do that, then they have to notify the public of their violations, and then they'll need to bring themselves into compliance. And so water authorities have known something is coming for a long time. There's been a lot of discussion in the clean water space about the need to act on PFAS. This rule initially was put out last year and received over 120,000 comments submitted by the public on the proposal. Penn Environment helped collect a lot of those comments from Pennsylvanians. There was a lot of public engagement on this comment period. And so we're glad to see that the rule not only requires this close monitoring, but also has a clear timeline for when you need to, make sure that this stuff is no longer coming out of the tap.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break. So you're listening to the Alchar Chronicles with my guest, Stephanie Wine, clean water advocate with Penn Environment Research and Policy Center. We're discussing recently issued rules by US EPA on forever chemicals, also known as PFAS, in drinking water. So do stay with us. We will be right back.
WDIY's overnight delivery service is a refreshing mix of vintage and current popular music. You'll hear many of the artists played on The Blend and some from our folk, blues, and world programs. WDIY Overnight is a continuous mix of music popular with night owls and late shift workers. Listen Monday through Saturday night from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. and Sundays from midnight to 5 a.m. for this great mix of hand-picked music on WDIY.
Welcome back to the Alchar Chronicles. We are talking with Ms. Stephanie Wine, clean water advocate with Penn Environment Research and Policy Center, speaking about recently issued rules addressing forever chemicals in drinking water. So prior to the break, we were getting a very nice overview as to what the rules are and why they're important. Let me ask this question. Generally speaking, is my drinking water safe? How would I know?
So that depends on where you get your drinking water from. So if you are on municipal water, you can reach out to the water authority, and you probably get in your water bill. Not everyone notices this, but usually most ratepayers will actually see annually with their water bill, there's like what the testing of the water authority has been like, have they found elevated levels of anything? So you can actually see what they're testing, what they're finding. There's a lot of contaminants. The PFAS regulations are new, but there's a lot of stuff that they've been required to test for a very long time. And so you're able to either look at what's provided proactively by your water authority or go to your water authority and look to see what the testing looks like. You can ask the water authority if they've been proactively doing PFAS testing, because again, many have. The Pennsylvania rules went into effect last year. So all Pennsylvania authorities should have been doing testing for at least this past year, because the state level rules for PFAS and PFOA, those are those two types I already mentioned, those already went into effect, I believe, in January of 2023. So your water authority should already be starting to work on this already. And so if they've already done that testing, that's the sort of thing you should be able to find. Mm-hmm. It's a little different if you're on a well. Often private well owners are responsible for their own testing. And so if PFAS is part of that testing regimen, that's a good thing to check for. And the good news is that so this new rule, this applies to municipal water authorities. One critique of a lot of PFAS protections in the past is they really just applied to people who were on that sort of municipal water. If you're on a well, looking at the testing that you do, if it includes PFAS, and then looking into the new available funds that would be available to expand the testing that you're doing or to do cleanup for private wells, those are funds that will be made available by the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Mm-hmm. And so the question of, you know, how safe is my water from PFAS this very moment? Sometimes that's an open question. That's one of the reasons this rule is so needed, is that there haven't been a lot of rules or a lot of transparency around it so far. What I will say is the solution, unfortunately, as appealing as it is not running out and buying a case of bottled water until these rules go into effect. Because for one thing, bottled water is actually less regulated than municipal water. It's subject to far fewer tests and far less scrutiny than the water that comes out of your tap if you're on municipal water. And also because when it's been tested, some bottled water brands have had sky-high levels of PFAS and of a lot of microplastics. You can imagine if you're getting bottled water in a plastic bottle, a lot of that plastic is ending up in the water that you're drinking. Mm-hmm. And so what I will say is that the PFAS in our drinking water is going to be going down because of these new rules. If you have specific concerns about acute contamination, you should reach out to your water authority. There are technologies that exist for in-home filtration if you're worried about your own well. But then if you have concerns, running out to buy bottled water isn't necessarily a good first step, because that you can jump out of the frying pan and right into the fire in terms of PFAS.
Mm. Here's another question. Can I boil PFAS out of my water?
That's a great question. When people think about contaminated water, the first thing that comes to mind is often a boil water advisory. That is not recommended with chemical contamination, any chemical contaminant, or with PFAS. The reason you'd boil your water is because you have some sort of pathogen in it, some kind of bacteria or virus that can make you sick. And boiling will, of course, kill that and leave you with sterile water. But PFAS, it isn't a live bacteria. It isn't a live virus. And so when you boil PFAS contaminated water, you're evaporating water. And essentially, all you're doing is concentrating that PFAS in the water. And so if you have any kind of chemical contaminant in your water, be it PFAS or anything else, also if you're concerned about lead or heavy metals in your water, any sort of non-living contaminant, boiling water is not the solution. All you'll do is essentially cook down a hyper-concentrated version of what came out of the tap in your first place. So that's a really good question.
How about bathing, showering? Is there a potential health risk to me by using tap water?
So the biggest risk with PFAS in water is ingestion. And so PFAS in the water at the same level ingested versus rubbed on your skin is going to cause a bigger risk from ingesting it versus, you know, washing it on your hands. There has been some research indicating that it can volatilize like in hot shower water. Like if you have really high levels of PFAS in your water, you think of a really hot shower that's really steamy and you have all those vapors. There could also be an inhalation component there too. But again, that's when we're talking about like pretty high, like acute levels of PFAS. Most of the research and most of the concern is, again, around when it comes to the water in our homes is about ingestion versus these other sources. But if you're concerned about a really acute contamination, like if you're in one of these, if you're in a home that has a well where you know that there are really high levels, then you might be more concerned about it in these other uses like cooking and bathing than someone who's just worried about having, you know, low levels in their city water. We know that because this persists for so long, some of the ways that people will end up with acute levels in their well specifically is, you know, folks who are, for example, near military training bases where they've put out fires for years and years and years, like the instances at Willow Grove. If they're near a firefighting training center where you have fires being put out over years and years and years, again, one of the most common uses of PFAS is in firefighting foam. or if you're near an industrial site where PFAS chemicals are repeatedly used over years, that's where acute exposures can come from. But also, even a single fire decades ago can then leave the groundwater in an area contaminated. And so one great example is in Sellersville in northern Bucks County. There was a tire fire that lasted for 3 days. Back in the 80s, there were dozens of fire companies that responded to this fire. And you can imagine the amount of firefighting foam that's needed to put out a fire of that scale. It was that level of response that still contributes to the PFAS contamination in the well water in that neighborhood to this day. So for the last decade, since the PFAS contamination was discovered, this neighborhood has been relying on water brought in, on clean water, trucking clean water into the neighborhood. And just this past year, I had the privilege of being at a ribbon cutting for the beginning of bringing clean city water out to that neighborhood so they didn't need to rely on their contaminated wells or bring in that bottled water anymore, connecting them to clean filtered water. So folks in a neighborhood like that, that they know that they have very high levels, then that's when you might worry about these other pathways of exposure. But that's sort of more the acute case versus these low chronic levels, which may not pose an acute risk, but which we definitely need to bring down so that we don't have that repeated ongoing exposure chronically over time.
Mm-hmm. So if these forever chemicals are so toxic, why not ban them in total? Why not ban the production of them?
So that's what we're saying. That's what we've been calling for. I can't tell you why not to do it. All I can tell you is why to do it. I actually think that's a great idea. So Penn Environment and Environment America, we have been calling for a long time the phase out of PFAS in industrial and consumer products. One of the major ways, like I mentioned, that it enters our water is through firefighting foams. So we have been calling for a long time to phase out PFAS from firefighting foam. We support a statewide ban on PFAS and firefighting foam going forward. It's easier to turn off the tap on some of this stuff than to keep having to clean it up. As long as we keep using PFAS, we're going to need to keep filtering out at our drinking water sites. And so if the tub is overflowing, you don't just keep bailing it out, you turn off the tap. And that's what our approach needs to be to pushing some of these toxic chemicals out into our environment. And so the Department of Defense, for example, has begun to phase out PFAS in their processes. So we know it's possible. They're sort of leading the way. And we think that that should be the standard and that those rules should be in place for a lot of the different firefighting units. A lot of firefighters, I hear all the time about how concerned they are about the hazards that the PFAS that they use on the job pose to their health. Mm-hmm. And so it really is a no-brainer, both for the community at large, but then also for the firefighters that are actually handling these chemicals. We're also supporting a ban on PFAS in consumer products. I have a young daughter. She's 6 months old this week. And PFAS flame retardants are in so many baby products. I cannot tell you. It should not be extra work on my part to sort of go through and figure out which products are the ones that don't include these chemicals that I'm exposing this young baby to. The standard should be that things be PFAS free. And so whether it's firefighting foam or consumer products in our homes, we definitely, definitely support a step away from these PFAS chemicals that we've been using for so long.
How would the consumer identify? How did you identify, for example, that there were PFAS products in whatever it was you were buying for your baby?
The companies that don't include PFAS in their manufacturing will often fly that flag loudly. That's a selling point. And so those manufacturers often want to share that. And then there's also something called the OEKOTEX, it's spelled OEKO-TEX standard, which is a label for textiles that are tested to not have harmful substances in them. It's a certification, like an industry certification, much like something, you know, there's organic. Organic means something specific and fair trade certified means something specific. This is sort of an industry label that indicates that it doesn't have a lot of the major sort of bad actor. And coming on the heels of this landmark rule, addressing drinking water, the EPA is also finalizing a rule that will make it easier to clean up the PFAS pollution that we're seeing across the Commonwealth and the nation. And so on April 19th, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency took a far-reaching and critical step, allowing the agency to make polluters pay for the cost of cleaning up PFAS at Superfund sites. More specifically, they took this step by listing two PFAS chemicals that I've mentioned already that are most common, PFOA and PFOS, under CERCLA, or the Comprehensive Emergency Response Compensation and Liability Act, which people might better know as the Superfund law. Superfund law provides the EPA with the ability to go and find the potentially responsible parties for environmental contamination and compel them to perform adequate cleanup or pay damages for contaminated sites, and also provides public funding to cleaning up those sites. There's over 180 Superfund sites in the U.S. that are contaminated specifically with PFAS, 16 of those in Pennsylvania, some here in the Lehigh Valley. And so this will make both public funding available to do cleanup of these longstanding contamination sites, and it will give the EPA the ability to sort of lay the bill for this contamination at the feet of those who are putting this pollution out in the environment in the first place. We like that this is a comprehensive approach. You know, this isn't just about taking the PFAS out of our water at the water treatment plant. It's about actually cleaning it up in the environment in the first place. Obviously, ultimately, we want to see these chemicals phased out. We don't want to be using them anymore. But there's already so many in the environment that providing the resources to help do that cleanup is a really great step that we're really excited to see. And it has excellent implications for Pennsylvania. Listing PFOA and PFOS as toxic under Superfund law is an important step to help eliminate these pervasive and dangerous chemicals from our lives. For decades, the chemical industry has polluted our communities with these forever chemicals, and Pennsylvanians have been the ones suffering the consequences. And so from Penn Environment's perspective, no one should be worrying whether their well water, their groceries, even their clothing is contaminated with these toxic chemicals, but that's been the reality for too long in Pennsylvania. So EPA's announcement is a critical step towards getting PFAS out of our waterways and, again, making polluters pay. Really, they're the responsible party. This should be at their feet. But now we just need to turn off the tap on toxic PFAS everywhere.
So if people would like some additional information on Penn Environment, for example, but also on this particular rule, where can they go?
So if folks want to check out Penn Environment's statement on the new drinking water limits on these forever chemicals, you can check out our website. It's pennenvironment.org, P-E-N-N environment.org, where not only is there information about the new rule, but also our other work on PFAS, whether that's in firefighting foams or the fact that it's now being seen more and more on playing fields. Folks may have heard that there's been a lot of revelations recently around PFAS in the synthetic turf often used in soccer and football fields. A lot of those fields contain PFAS as well. And so that's another avenue of exposure, both for our athletes, professional and, you know, the kids playing soccer. That's another avenue of exposure. And of course, our athletic fields are just out in the open on being exposed to the elements, where rainwater can bring PFAS and microplastics down into the water table. And so that's another place that there's PFAS exposure through that leachate. There's more information about that on our website as well. So we're at pennenvironment.org.
Well, my guest has been Stephanie Wine, clean water advocate with Penn Environment Research and Policy Center, discussing the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's recently issued rules on PFAS, also known as forever chemicals, in drinking water. Stephanie, thank you so much for a very informative and enlightening discussion.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to talk about such a huge step forward.
This is Karen Elchar. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to WDIY. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we'll see you next time on the Elchar Chronicles. If you enjoyed this program, please go to WDIY.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.